Blog Talk Radio.
Of Goldman
Morgan Stanley is eliminating 1,600 jobs. Goldman has cut more than $1 billion in costs over the last year as it grapples with a weak European economy. In a still relatively lackluster U.S. recovery, and the impact of fresh financial regulations. Mr. Freeman of Barclays expects the bank would only make major job cuts if it decided to exit a business once the Volcker Rule, which bans banks from gambling with their own money, is finalized in the U.S. later this year. Investors will be looking on Wednesday for evidence that Goldman executives believe they can build on last year's financial results over the next 12 months. The answer, said an analyst, will depend in a large part on the broader global economic backdrop, with the looming standoff in the U.S. over the $16.4 trillion debt ceiling presenting the biggest immediate threat. Well, we'll find out how much compensation they've given themselves. And what's that lovely day? Compensation Communication Day. Talk about people who are rewarded for work, huh?
Yes. And
there's a lot of articles on the flu.
Yeah, I think it might be worth reading that because Lyle and I are dead set against the vaccine.
I wouldn't take it.
And there's a good article down here on vaccinations that should be read.
On Thermosil?
Yeah.
That's close to the end of that.
Was it? That'd be worth reading. Oh. You know what's kind of a fun article? Fun article I read today was about Al Gore not showing up at the sale of his business.
Oh, I read that too.
And I thought that was kind of funny.
Nobody wants to see him. He's such a jerk.
No, and the people that work for him, it was just like, what a joke and a half this guy is. And
nobody really likes him. I mean, he's lost all credibility.
Yeah.
He just went right past it.
No, that wasn't the same one. That was a different one.
Oh, there are two articles on the wonderful Al Gore.
Well, let me. This one. I'll get back to Al Gore, but this one caught me because they're trying to ban conspiracy theories around the country now, especially on the school shooting. But there's never been more of a strange conspiracy than that school shooting, right, in Sandy Hook, unless you want to include 911 with it, right? And
the death of John Kennedy.
Yeah, you know, just my God, you know.
The death of John Kennedy Jr., the death of Princess Diana.
Yeah.
Questions around all these deaths.
Let me just read this.
Let's put it this way. You have questions because there's a lack of transparency.
Exactly. And this Sandy Hook.
Things that are hidden from the public.
Bullshit.
So we don't know that. We just know that there's a lack of transparency. And what we know is there are things that don't make sense. And there are things that haven't been reported or things that have conflicting reports. So we haven't had transparency, and we haven't had full disclosure.
And probably one of the worst things is, this happened, and they announced that they talk about this as a false flag operation again. Mm-hmm. You know, but
they don't know.
Sandy Hook shooting, active shooter drill confirmed by law enforcement, raises suspicion of false flag operations. Now, you know, they did it on 9/11. They did it on 7/7/7. And they did it again on this one, and they keep doing it. They did it in the Aurora Theater Massacre, where there always seems to be a drill going on at the same time.
Parallel time.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. Once again, a government-funded mock emergency drill was being conducted at a nearby local school at the very same time the supposed real-time shooting was taking place at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, leaving all the fingerprints of a government-staged false flag event to strip guns from the American people. This is by Shepard M. Bellis and Alex Thomas of the Intel Hub. And it says, many people involved in responding to the Newtown school shooting have been shown to be participants in active shooter drills either in the past or on the very day of the shooting. To top it all off, there are still many inconsistencies in the official story. One of the noticeable problems with the official story is that alleged shooting suspect Adam Lanza's car was identified as a black Honda Civic, Connecticut plate number 872YEO, which is registered to one Christopher A. Rodina, born August 69, totally discrediting the official story.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, huh?
I thought that was very odd.
Yeah. How would such information get covered up? Well, let's look at John Blowey, a Connecticut State Superior Court judge who has just put a halt on search warrant affidavits. An excerpt from the local Connecticut Post reads, Danbury, a state superior court judge, said Thursday that search warrants affidavits for the cars and homes of Sandy Hook Elementary School shooter Adam Lanza and his mother would stay sealed for another 90 days. Now, why is that?
I have no idea.
Because they need to mess around, you know, get their facts straight, or get their stories straight. Judge John Blowey granted motions filed Wednesday by Danbury State Attorney Stephen Sedensky to extend the statutory sealing period for the five warrants, including three for the Yogananda Street home, where 20-year-old Lanza fatally shot his mother, Nancy, four times in the face on the morning of December 14th, before embarking on the rampage that left 20 first graders and six educators dead. Why should evidence be withheld from an event that had been publicized in the mainstream media as the world's worst school shooting ever? What's wrong with this picture? Police intrigue. Adding to the intrigue, Lieutenant Paul Vance of the Connecticut State Police, the man responsible for avoiding important questions to the press regarding the Sandy Hook shooting, has gotten this recent promotion, which he admitted himself on camera for what he said he heard was going to be a sold-out show. Vance has also trained on several occasions for mock school active shooter drills. Vance is a seasoned spokesman and a well-trained at talking with the press and members of the media. Vance was quoted at Sandy Hook press conference saying, we've been asked by the family members to ask the members of the press to respect their privacy and please leave us alone. All right, fill the media scrum. I'm pleading with you. As you know, this is an extremely heartbreaking, difficult thing. Please abide by their request. All right. But anyway, what they're saying, of course, is that none of this stuff makes any sense. You know, none of it makes much sense. And you keep looking at the evidence, and we brought this up before on our show, and we'll continue as we see these strange things happening. You know?
There's a very odd piece of video showing that Lieutenant Vancer.
It's on there.
You can't really. It loses. It's just a little bit in audio, but looking at his face and what he has to say, it's very strange.
Yeah. You probably got
to
see it.
I think you have to have both together for it to make any sense, and the audio isn't really that clear. There's a lot of interesting stuff in the news. It's very hard to pick.
Just hang on one second. I'm trying to get this thing to work here. What happened? You figure that one out, Layla?
No.
Just like poof. I'm trying to get it on this other computer now.
scandal that will bring Obama down. This is interesting.
A scandal that will bring Obama down.
Well, they're actually saying that it was
a
conspiracy to kidnap the ambassador, who was eventually killed.
Right.
I don't know whether this is true or not, but this is what's being said. This is westernjournalism.com. It's even worse than we previously thought. A retired four-star admiral, is now claiming that Barack Obama intentionally conspired with America's enemies to stage a bogus attack and the kidnapping of an American ambassador so he could negotiate the release of a hostage and bolster his mediocre approval rating just prior to the election. The Washington Examiner quoted retired four-star Admiral James Lyon, writes, "The attack on the American consulate in Benghazi was the result of a bungled abduction attempt, the first stage of an international prisoner exchange that would have ensured the release of Omar Abdel Rahman, the blind sheikh. But something went horribly wrong with Obama's October surprise. Although the Obama administration intentionally gutted security at the consulate prior to the staged kidnapping, former Navy SEALs Tyrone Woods and Glenn Doherty obeyed direct orders to stand down, saved American lives, single-handedly killed scores of attackers, and the attackers, believing that Obama had betrayed them, tortured Ambassador Chris Stevens and dragged his body through the streets." Some will say that Admiral Lyon's accusation is not a smoking gun. We agree that's exactly why Congress must investigate Benghazi Gate. Moreover, we firmly believe that the problem with Admiral Lyon's assertion is that he is only scratching the surface. The full and complete truth may be much, much worse. Benghazi Gate is not about a bogus YouTube video series of lies. It's about the Obama administration's foreign policy ineptitude. We are dealing with something, and it's not about the Obama administration's foreign policy ineptitude. We are dealing with something much more sinister, something potentially treasonous. And the following questions posed in the article in The New American go to the heart of the matter. What was the Obama administration's full role in helping violent jihadists, self-styled al-Qaeda terrorists, and Western-backed revolutionaries taking over Libya in the first place? Did the half-baked scheme to arm jihadist leaders who had previously fought U.S. troops in Iraq contribute to the attack? What was actually going on at the compound in Benghazi, which, as the report states, was never a consulate? Was Ambassador Stevens recruiting among jihadists and terrorists to wage war on the Syrian regime after what Obama called the success in Libya? Why did the administration claim for so long that the attack was just a protest over a YouTube video gone awry? Was the lack of security at the compound a political ploy to conceal the extent of the lawlessness and utter chaos left in the wake of Obama's unconstitutional regime change war on Libya? It's clear Benghazi Gate is only a small piece of a much larger operation, an attempt to conceal what the New American calls the Obama administration's full role in helping violent jihadists and self-styled al-Qaeda terrorists. There was also something else that we read about what was happening, Leo, remember, in Benghazi, that they were, they had weapons there.
They were gun running to the rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And that Benghazi there was, that station was where they were. Where all the guns were being held.
Yeah.
And it's really lurid. And there's so much.
And was Ambassador Stevens part of that? We don't know.
Yeah, he was.
He must have been.
He was.
We don't know whether he was.
He
just kind of assumed that he was.
He was there, you know.
So he must have been.
There at the wrong place at the wrong time, I guess.
Was he in the way?
I wonder.
Was he standing in the way? We don't know.
I don't know.
But something that should be investigated, I think.
Never will be,
No.
It's done. It never got. I mean,
no.
The Hillary conveniently got a
concussion,
and you know, somebody probably knocked her out.
Pushed her down.
We're headed for, and at 8:30 we'll bring on our guest Jim Russell and talk about fluoride, in the water. What I'd like to do is here's another link that I wanted to talk about, because Tuesday nights we like to talk about environmental and health. But junk food linked to asthma and eczema in children. The high saturated fat levels in junk in food, such as hamburgers, lower children's immune systems, is believed. A research project involving more than 50 countries found that teenagers who ate junk food 3 times a week or more were 39% more likely to get severe asthma, and younger children were 27% more at risk. Both were also more prone to eye conditions, rhinoconjunctivitis, and according to the Sun newspaper. And so, you know, all this evidence is out there, but why?
People don't believe it.
Why don't they stop it? You know, why don't they?
Because the corporations are selling. Sell.
And they believe corporations, I guess. I don't know.
Well, because they're all over the media, and that's what they do.
And the people believe the media, which is absolutely stupid, you know, to do. So, but I wanted to show this.
Mainstream media is
The high saturated levels fat levels of foods such as burgers lower children's immune systems. It's really a research project involved more than 50 countries found that teenagers who ate junk food 3 times a week or more were 39% more likely to get asthma. Both were more immune to the skin, to eye conditions, but just 3 weekly portions of fruit and vegetables could cut that risk by 14% in younger groups. 11% amongst teens, it is believed. Researchers from New Zealand, Auckland University, looked at the diets of 181,000 youngsters aged 6 to 7 and 313,000 aged 13 to 14. The scientists then asked if the children had allergy symptoms. They wrote in the journal Thorax, where the study is published, fast food may be contributing to increasing asthma and rhinoconjunctivitis and eczema, regular consumption of fruits and vegetables likely protect it. In the UK alone, 1.1 million children already suffer with asthma, and 1 in 5 get eczema. And the team of researchers warned that their results do not prove cause and effect. Well, I can tell you, if they're eating gluten, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they're getting eczema from that. You know, from all the crappy wheat and products that gluten has. And if they're getting asthma, that's something else. You know? Also, New York preparing to put gun owners in mental hospitals. It's true. New York.
All right.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and Democrats and Republicans have worked out a tentative deal rolling back the Second Amendment in the state. They have also proposed declaring gun owners mentally ill. Lawmakers will debate aspects of the new proposal today in the Senate and Assembly, according to NBC in New York. The deal would further restrict so-called assault weapons and limit the size of rifle magazines from the current 10 to 7 bullets. That's almost just stupid.
Really?
You know, 10 to 7? You know? This is that stupid. The stupidity involved with this is that, in addition to mandating the sort of weapons and size of magazines, the government will allow the state residents to possess. Legislators want to enact a law that would allow civil confinement of people considered a threat. Who's a threat?
So how do they, I was going to say, well, how do they
who
determine that?
A threat, yeah.
Someone doesn't like their neighbor and calls and says they're a threat?
Yep. Yeah, or, well, you do have some people who, like, you know, have called them bomb threats or crazy asses like that. You know, that I can understand, but then how do they label who's a threat? New York has singled it out now to apply the procedure to gun owners it deems a threat. Procedure allowed the state to commit sex offenders to civil confinement was advocated by former New York Governor Elias Spitzer, model citizen he is, and the procedure allows the state to commit sex offenders to mental hospitals. Now, is he a sex offender, Elliot Spitzer? Would he be considered a sex offender?
Well, he has...
He's a John.
I wouldn't consider him one, would you?
Well, they don't know.
By law, would he be considered
He's a sex offender.
If he was convicted...
If he was basically convicted, yeah.
I mean, was he convicted of anything?
Well, no, he resigned.
Well, then, if he was not convicted of anything, that he's not.
But he would still be. He might be.
Let's say he's tainted.
His reputation is tainted. He's a John. And New York has singled out and now applied the procedure to gun owners it deems a threat. Standard of proof is committal proceedings is generally lower than the beyond a reasonable doubt standard stipulated by the Fifth and Fourth Amendments on the Constitution. Short of actually confining gun owners, the law may be used to deny targeted individuals the right to own firearms after a court determination. For instance, in Oregon, individuals who have been committed are forbidden from owning, buying, or possessing firearms. That's not a bad idea. What do you think?
As long as the proceedings have been legal.
Yeah, and the people you're just denying people who have had mental problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, allow them to own a gun. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That sounds logical to me. But
you never know with some of these laws.
You never know how far they're going to go. You know.
That's right.
And before we bring Jim up, I was hoping to find a fluoride article here, but.
There is not one on there, but there's one on probably on Natural News if you go to that.
I don't know if we got enough time.
No, we don't.
Yeah, what I wanted to talk about.
That's a very good article right there.
Everybody has those little curly light bulbs now. CFL
and
bulbs.
Computers and phones.
Yeah, contain harmful chemicals that damage your skin. These curly Q light bulbs or fluorescent bulbs. The government banning on moving to ban incandescent light bulbs in favor of energy saving compact fluorescent lights or CFLs is important to remember what this means to your health. A German study that found that compact fluorescent lights emit cancer causing chemicals such as phenol, naphthalene, and styrene, which, when switched on. Inspired by these findings, researchers at Stony Brook University in New York have released a study on the effects that UV radiation from CFL bulbs can have on human skin cells. Well, that's wonderful. Right?
Yeah.
For the rest of this article, Mental Hub. Abundant research has shown that the UVA radiation can penetrate to the deepest level of skin tissue.
Mm-hmm.
It is known to contribute greatly to skin wrinkling, and according to U.S.-Australia studies, UV ultraviolet, radiation, causes the greatest amount of damage to skin cells where most skin cancers start. These cells are called keratinocytes, and they are the same cells that researchers at Stony Brook exposed to radiation from CFL bulbs. So who's responsible for the radiation given off by these energy-efficient bulbs? Well, in 2006-2007, the American Conference of Governmental Industrial Hygienists measured base levels of radiation given off by CFL lights as a completely non-governmental member-based organization that's comprised of leading occupational hygiene professionals. These levels were then reviewed by the IESNA. Their president, Chip Israel, is the owner of Light Designs Alliance, one of the world's leading lighting design firms with offices in Chicago. Yeah, right. All right, so it's all collusive. But anyway, those damn little curly Q lights, bad for you.
Along with a lot of computers, cell phones, all kinds of
bad.
You end up with an overload of radiation.
Yeah.
And you certainly have to be careful with kids that it doesn't build up on them.
Absolutely. We're going to call our friend Jim Russell of We Are Change, and we will do that right this minute. And maybe Lena, you might be able to read something quickly.
Okay,
you're going to
call him on the computer?
Yep.
We're going to talk about fluoride with him, how he's put a bill in the Connecticut legislature. Oh, Roy, how about this, folks? Reuters spins a flu story. It's an article entitled "Epidemic Levels in the U.S. Says the CDC." Reporter shares during the virulent epidemic nature of the current flu sweeping. Reuters admits it lacks documentation of the very numbers it purports to use.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Jim.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, well, we're very pleased to have you. And can you tell the folks that are listening what your good news is about fluoride?
Yes. Last week, I got an email from one of the senators in Connecticut, not a federal senator, an in-state senator, that I've been working with for about 8 months, and I got a confirmation of a bill number, and it's going to committee. To repeal fluoridation of the public water supply. It's 12 words long. It's not that hard. Even the smartest politician can read it. And like I said, it's going to committee in the state of Connecticut. So what I'm asking you guys to do, and all your listeners and all your listeners' friends and all your listeners' friends' friends and their friends' friends and everybody and their mother, to literally get on the horn and call each one of their representatives, if it's theirs or not, each one of the representatives of the Public Health Committee, which is downloadable off the, I think it's ct.gov site. You can go on there and go click committees, and you can find the Public Health Committee, and you can find out who may be on the committee and how to contact them. And so you do all that, and then, like I said, you can also go on our Facebook, which is We Are Change CP on Facebook. We have a YouTube channel, which is We Are Change Connecticut. We actually have a good video on there. I think it's on the top. It should be the featured video where I confront Larry Butler, which is my representative from Waterbury, and Joanne Hartley, which is my state senator in Waterbury. And I stop and ask them both before they go into the event with Bill Clinton and Chris Murphy, fluoridation. And they pretty much totally ignored me and treated me like I was some cuckoo head. And this is the funny thing. During a campaign season, they had the audacity not to answer questions because they know there's no way to answer that question. And you could see it on live video and how they treated me. And then last Friday, I also went into the city of Waterbury downtown because I'm waiting for a return phone call from one of the Larry's aides. And he told me in November he was not going to blow me off because I told him everybody in the city blows me off and I need to make sure I get contacted. No, Mr. Russell, you're going to get contacted back. I won't blow you off. I promise you. Sure enough, he blows me off. So I go to the office on Friday to ask, why haven't I gotten a phone call? And he told me, I'm not on the case anymore. You're going to be getting contact from city representatives. And I'm like, well, who are these city representatives? He goes, well, Don Carver, which is the city superintendent of water, which I've been trying to get a hold of for over a year. He doesn't contact me. He doesn't care. He's too busy, you know, probably drinking fluoride. Joe Geary, which is the the mayor's aide, top aide, very disrespectful person, very condescending. I've met him a couple times. Just he, very disrespectful to the people. And then this gentleman actually said that the Waterbury Police Department is going to be calling me. And I'm like, what? Waterbury Police? What do they have to do? So are you going to start arresting politicians? You know, that's, I almost wanted to say that. But I was polite about it. You can watch this on the video on our YouTube channel. Really good video. And it just shows you the way just regular benign people like me and asking questions. So like I said, what everybody needs to do is you can go on our website, wearechangedct.org, and you can get links to the bills and stuff like that. The bill is SB, which is Senate Bill 131. Now, from my understanding, that when a bill is introduced with a number, it may change. So people need to keep an eye on and watch where it goes and how it goes, because it can change. When it goes to committee, let's say a committee passes it, it could change through to a different number. So Senate Bill 131 is what it is right now. Like I said, we need everybody to call all of these representatives that are on a public health committee. Call your local representative, even if he's not on the public health committee, because if it goes past the public health committee, it's going to go to your representatives. So they need to have a warning about this so that they know that this is coming. Call your senators in the state. Literally call them every day. You know, that's, who cares? Just bother these people. I did the work, people. I got the bill. There is a bill right now going to committee to repeal fluoridation. So if anybody wants to look up the bill, you can go to ct.gov. I think at the top you click legislation, and then you can – it's been a minute since I've been on the website. But I think if you click legislation, you can click a bill, and you can just put just 131, and it'll come up. And you can read it for yourself. I mean, like, it's just 12 words long.
Jim, how did you finally convince someone to get that into committee? What did you have to do? What was?
Well, this gentleman, Joe Markley, great patriot of this nation so far, he pretty much is the same view of like that we have. He doesn't believe that, you know, the state of Connecticut, or any state for that matter, should be telling the people what they should have or not have. And that's kind of how he pretty much perceived it right off the bat. And I didn't really have to get into full discussion. I didn't have to get into the bads and the goods of it, because he kind of said, listen, it's not the right of the state to tell you that. But, you know, he did want to know more, so I did give him some other information to help, you know, kind of persuade him to really get this bill and the understanding of it. So it was really easy. It's just being a pain in the ass is really what helped me, because calling and talking to his aide almost every other day, bothering her, sending her more emails, calling her again, making sure she got the emails, calling back a week later, hey, how's everything going, sending emails, and, you know, just constantly being a pain in the ass. Unfortunately, that's the way we got to do it in this country now, because these people don't listen to us. And as you watched this video with Larry Butler, Joan Hartley, and the city rep, they don't listen to you. They tell you they're going to call the cops on you. I mean, really? The
that
cops?
That was a threat. This gentleman that helped you, now, is he a legislator? Is he a senator or representative, or is he an aide?
No, he's just an aide. Yeah, he's the administrative aide to the mayor of Waterbury. So, you know, he's really, you know, just a nothing kind of a person. But, you know, at first he was willing to help me because he didn't really know nothing. He was just a fresh guy on the block, really. You know, I kind of called the mayor's office because I was being treated like crap by everybody. No one's getting back to me. So I wanted to speak to the mayor. I was like, you know, can I speak to someone in the mayor's office to find out why isn't nobody calling me or contacting me back or just treating me with disrespect? And he goes, I'll take care of you. Talk me out. He's like, I'll take care of you. Yeah, I'm going to do. Yeah. And then sure enough, that was in November, around Thanksgiving. And 2 weeks after that, I call him back saying, hey, it's been 2 weeks. What's going on? Oh, I'm still looking into it. I'll find out. I'm not going to blow you off, I promise. And then a month go by, and then this is, you know, I kept leaving messages, and I said, forget it. I had to actually take Friday off to get one of my molars pulled because fluoridation is so great in this country. So I went and get a tooth pulled, and right after I got out of the tooth getting pulled, literally my blood all in my mouth and everything, I went down to the mayor's office. Blood pouring out of my mouth, I didn't care. But I kind of kept it, you know, hidden. I had a video camera, and I said, you know what the hell, let me go down here and see what's going on, have a day off, you know. Mm-hmm. And instead of calling me, you know, he just had me go down, and he's like, oh, I can't take care of it. But what's really funny, he said the Waterbury police are going to contact me. And I almost wanted to say, well, I'm here right now, let's call them.
Yeah.
And I did talk to a police officer. There's a police officer. I know a couple people that are, you know, the good thing about being in my profession, I meet a lot of people in a lot of places. I actually know police officers that are like-minded like us, you know, just like us. And this officer that speaks to me, he even tells me how brainwashed the younger classmen of police officers are, and how they're only in for it for big houses and the ladies, if you want to say. And that's what he was telling me. And it's just really sad on the generations that are out there right now. Don't get me wrong, I'm only 35 years old, but damn, I feel like a 90-year-old to the way some of these people are nowadays. Just insane. But like I said, you know, what we need to do now is get everybody on the phone. Everybody needs to call their representatives. This is where we're at now. If it doesn't go past committee, it goes nowhere. So it's up to the people to finally get off their bing bangs. You know, the last, you know, year I've been talking with everybody on the show, you know, there really wasn't much to do. Now there really is. Now the bill is in committee and needs to be passed so that it can go to public hearings. And that's the best part. Once it passes committee, we the people can go to the Capitol and stand there and speak on our behalf. And what we need to do, if it does do that, we need to have a storm to the Capitol and just everybody constantly just going up there and talking about how bad it is and how they don't want it.
But is there anybody, Jim, that can really understand this problem? The guy that presented the bill, does he really understand fluoridation and what it's doing and why it was brought to us?
Well, from my experience, I don't think a damn person knows a damn thing about a damn thing. They're just so ignorant. Now, no offense, I'm not saying to say this gentleman is, because he's looking at it from the liberty aspect, I would assume, which is a little bit more important to me than anything else, because if you start there, then you wouldn't be in the water in the first place. So I don't think he understands the full aspect in the full harm of this, which is the reason why I did send him a lot of information. I got stuff that a lot of people don't have, and I just kept sending it to him. And so I'm sure he kind of is like, oh, okay, you know what I mean? But other than that, I actually was at one of the Independent Party meeting in Waterbury not too long ago, because I do attend that once in a while, because they're the only people that actually have brains and listen. And they actually had a representative that was from the Republican Party, and I'm not trying to bash Democrats or Republicans, but we all know that they're just not working right now. So we had a representative from the Republican Party come to the Independent Party meeting, which is open to the public. I mean, anybody is welcome to show up, Republican, Democrats, whatever. And at the very end of the meeting, I did tell everybody about this bill and what to do and start, you know, getting on a horn and start calling people. And after we left, that one gentleman that was a Republican that was at the meeting was questioning me on my reasoning and on my education of fluoride, which come to find out, he had no clue. He goes, oh, it's good for you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. You know what? Okay. So is radiation, right? He then still kept on talking to me, but as he's walking to his vehicle, and I don't know if anybody really knows, but I'm a pain in the ass, okay? I really am. I am going to bother the hell out of you. You ask me questions, I'm going to make sure you get the answer. So I followed him to the car. I'm like, okay, you want to talk? Let's walk. So he gets in his car, and he's just very disrespectful. He kind of didn't understand the situation. He goes, well, I think the state has the right to take care of the people. Really? Well, wouldn't you think that would start with a balanced budget? I don't know. So he almost ran me over because he just wanted to get away from me so fast that he even closed his car door. He literally turned his truck on and took off with the door open because I'm standing there. He couldn't close it. You know, and this is the how people are. They're just, well, it's good for you. It's good for you. I actually when I spoke to you in the middle of the summer, when I spoke with the alderman of Waterbury, he then went to the Board of Health in Waterbury. And there's a gentleman named Sam D'Ambrosi, which is the president of the commission. And he spoke with him, and come to my demise, I find out because I tried to get a hold of Paul Pernuski for a long time. He never got a hold of me. I had to send a certified letter to him to find out what's going on. I get the certified letter back on October 30th. Now, mind you, I met with him in June. When I met with him, he went to the public health board, and they had a meeting 2 weeks later on July 5th. I didn't know nothing about it. They actually invited local dentists to come, and they presented a PowerPoint presentation that focused around my article in the Waterbury paper. He was pretty much demonizing me, mentioning things that was never said or wasn't even in that intention, talking about how Mr. Russell is worried, but he doesn't care about what the CDC and the ADA has to say. Well, no offense, I don't care what they have to say because they don't mean nothing. They're all executive orders anyways. But who is this guy to sit here and demonize people when he's supposed to be on the public health board? It's disgusting how these people are. When I called the public health of Waterbury, the public health in Connecticut, you know, the public health board, whatever the hell they are, they were like, "Well, if you don't like it, you can just go buy bottled water." What? Well, if anybody doesn't know, a lot of bottled water is fluoridated.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Okay. And what's funny, when I was talking to the senator's aide, this was all happening when I was talking with her, and I told her about that. And I didn't tell her that bottled water had fluoride in it. So I told her what the person at the public health told me. So the mayor, the senator's aide, a week later, contacts me back and goes, "Hey, Jim." I go, "What's up?" She's like, "Remember last week when you told me about them telling me that if you don't like it, buy bottled water?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "I've been researching it." She goes, "There's fluoride in bottled water." I go, "Ding." I go, "Yeah, I know that. That's what's so ignorant about the statement." She was really upset that they're telling me if I don't like it to buy a bottled water. Meanwhile, there's fluoride in bottled water. She's like, "Well, why would they tell you that?" It's because they don't know. They're so uneducated. They're so indoctrinated into the system that instead of questioning things, they just listen to what they're told because they would assume that the higher order knows what they're saying. Well, you know what? You know, Hitler said the same thing. He said, you know, "Hey, give me your guns. I'll take care of you." Yeah, okay. That's where we're heading down now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, from my experience, these representatives don't know crap. I'm really sad to say. They don't know nothing. So they're only speaking on behalf of what they perceive. "Oh, well, Mike," like when I was meeting with Paul Pernuski, the alderman, "well, my son has good teeth." Well, that's because you're a lawyer and you can afford a doctor, sir. You know, I mean, really? Yeah, your kid's going to have good teeth because, you're an assistant attorney general for the state. You know, and that's another thing. An alderman for the city of Waterbury, which is an assistant attorney general of the state. So, yeah, he's going to make sure that I don't push the fluoride factor because then that means the state's going to have to get involved legally too. So, you know, he's probably, I feel it's more of a conflict of interest, but what do I know? I don't know. I'm just a regular lemming that goes and work every day. But
how are you going to prevent your bill from being buried in that committee?
Oh, you know, the only way we can prevent that is everybody in their you need to call your family members that have already passed away and have them call. I mean, everybody needs to call everybody and need to be persistent. Call multiple times. Call once a week, whatever it may be. But we all need to pretty much get involved now. Like I said, I got us the bill. Now
mm-hmm.
It's to the people of Connecticut to get this bill passed the committee.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people on the public health committee, which is really nuts. There's probably like almost 20 people on that committee, which is kind of a good thing, but could be a bad thing. But we bother the heck out of a couple of these representatives on that committee, and they see eye to eye with us, then hopefully we can get that up there. So like I said, the only way we could do this is everybody needs to call the public health committee and call their state reps and call their state senators. All this could be found on ct.gov. You just go up on top, pick legislation or committees, and you can find all the committees there. The only thing is if you're going to call them individually, you would have to call, like, the Capitol, and a lot of times, these people do work like the rest of us, and they're not, like, actual congressmen and senators that don't do nothing. These people do have other jobs, so unfortunately, it would be hard to get a hold of them once in a while. But leave messages. All the emails for each one of these reps are on the site, so you can at least email them. Calling them, you would have to call the main switchboard and speak to each individual room, which is fine if you got the time. You know, I'm pretty sure some people do. I do it while I'm working. I'm working my butt off, and I'm on the phone calling these people. So, that's a good answer. What's that? Go ahead.
Let me ask you this. Does every state in the country, do they all have fluoride in their water? Is it universal in America?
I've never looked into each individual state's law. So I don't know if each state mandates it, but I'm pretty sure if they're fluoridating, there's probably some kind of a law in that state to do so. But I would say yeah. I mean, my best opinion, I would say yeah, most likely, most of this country, unless it comes down to, you know, more of a municipality where if the state doesn't tell you directly through a mandate, some municipalities will do it, some won't. I know that there's a lot of, if people look, just in 2012 alone, tons and tons of cities were repealing it. Some cities were actually getting fluoride. They're all happy. They're like, yay, we got fluoride. Yay. It's 2012 people, nobody understands what I, through my research, Connecticut is the second state in the union with the highest attendance to dentists. About 75% of the people in the state go to the dentist on a regular basis. So when they sit there and go, well, tooth decay is down. Yeah, it is, because we go to the dentist now. We're more aware. We are, you know, dentists back in the 60s probably were, you know, not on every street corner. You go to the Waterbury Mall, there's a dentist in there. In the Waterbury Mall is a dentist. You know, I go near a place up on West Main Street where they have a dentist there that has a car that will come pick you up. You know, they'll come pick you up no matter where you are. They're like, I'll come pick you up. You know, so when they sit here and go, well, you know, the cavities are down. Yeah, they're down because people are more, the dentistry is more available to people now.
Jim, I want to ask you this because we only got about 10 minutes left. You got two short videos on your website about fluoride in our water. One is
there's one of them where I was doing research on the newspapers from back in the late 1800s all the way up to about the 70s. I was doing tons of, like, just soul searching on the newspapers. I have a card that allows me to access old newspapers for the Hartford Current and the New York Post and the Washington Post and some Chicago Tribune and whatnot. And I was just searching. I just type in fluoride and see what comes up. And I started seeing articles back in the 60s with a group. I think they were called, I forgot the name of it. It was like something about, you know, a coalition against, for clean water or something like that. And there was they did a petition back in the 60s. And the petition gained 30,000 signatures. And there was a gentleman named Dave Wagner. I was like, well, you know what? It's 2012. I mean, if the guy's still alive, he'll be about 70, 71 years old. Let me background check and see if I can find this gentleman. So I did some looking. I did some background checks, and I found him. I called him up, and then I started asking him questions. And, you know, with the group, we have a couple members that love to go out and interview people. He was like, can we go interview him? I was like, heck yeah. So one of our members went down and interviewed him. He had a 25 to 30,000 signature petition that he sent into the U.S. Attorney General, got no response from it. So along with that and the referendums that were going on in the state that everybody said no, 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 the people's voice was not heard on anything for fluoride. So a lot of this passing of the fluoridation had nothing to do with the people saying yeah. But what I did notice, a lot of PTOs, which are parent-teacher organizations, were advocating for it. They were, but we're talking about parent-teacher organizations where, you know, it's just, I don't mean to talk bad about teachers or anybody like that. I don't want to put anything in a bad way, but they're a little indoctrinated themselves. They're only being told what their higher-ups are saying. Yeah, we need fluoride. So they were advocating for a lot of fluoride. So a lot of the PTOs were advocating for it, but that was really it. Not many people or other groups were saying, hey, let's get fluoride. So that video was on the website. I forgot. I think it's called Fluoride, the Silent Killer, which is it's a good clip.
Hey, what I wanted to mention, why I brought those two up is it says mercury and fluoride, the dumbing down of America, and fluoride, the amounts to public murder. And I wanted to play that 5 minutes in the last, we got 5 minutes left. But that, or at least tell people to go to WRCCT, WeAreChangeConnecticut.org. Because the problem is most people don't even know what the hell the problem is. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
They don't even understand what fluoride is. They don't have a clue. All right? And, and you're saying that this, even our illustrious Connecticut senators don't have a clue as to what it is. And so I think it's important that people know. And I was just going to play us out with this amounts to public murder, fluoride amounts to public murder, if that's all right with you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you guys giving me the time to speak. Like I said, everybody get on the phone and start bringing down the wall now. Go to WeAreChangeCT.org. Our YouTube and our Facebook are all on there. You can link from that. And I thank you guys, and I hope we all get to public committee and we can get this bill passed.
We'll do that, and thank you for all you're doing.
Thanks so much, Terry.
I appreciate it. Have a great night.
Good night.
You too. And that was Jim Russell. And we're going to play out the end of the show with Fluoride Amounts to Public Murder. Video. Go.
Now, Dr. Birker, your research shows that if all of the United States had been fluoridated, it would mean about 70,000 extra deaths because of cancer per annum. Those are remarkable, impressive, and in fact rather disquieting figures. Could you shortly describe your research in this field and what results did you get from it?
Yes. The 70,000, of course, would represent one-fifth of all the cancer deaths in the United States, twice as many from breast cancer in women and twice as many as from lung cancer in man. Our studies involve comparing the deaths of all persons in the 10 largest fluoridated cities of the United States with the 10 largest non-fluoridated cities in the United States year by year. And we obtained a very remarkable curve. You can see here, perhaps, here is the fluoridated, and here is the non-fluoridated set of 10 cities each. Before, here's where the fluoridation started. And before this time, both sets of cities were identical. But no sooner had fluoridation started than this curve began to go up. The deaths began to increase, so that this effect occurs very promptly within 1, 2, or 5 years.
Now, this, sir, is conclusive evidence that fluor kills because of cancer.
It is one of the most conclusive bits of scientific and biological evidence that I have come across in my 50 years in the field of cancer research.
Would this then, in your opinion, be the end of fluor in water, in drinking water?
It should be the end. And in the United States, it should so be the end by federal law known as the Delaney Amendment, which says that anything found to induce cancer in man or animals cannot be legally put into the food or drink of man or animals. And so, and this is all less than 1 year old, so that it entirely changes any previous ideas of fluoridation that anyone may have had, because this is the first real indication of an important effect.
Now, in this country, of course, the state of the dental state of the union
the way people's teeth looked is incredible indeed.
Would you say that stopping Fluor had other effects than increasing the dental problems in this country?
Well, I would rather look at it that it would certainly help the cancer death situation in this country, which I'm sure most people would agree is far more important than a temporary benefit to teeth in adolescent children. This, you see, amounts to public murder on a grand scale. It is a public crime, it would be, to put fluoride in the drinking water of people.
Now, the children of this cameraman and mine, sir, take Fluor. Should we stop this immediately?
Well, in my opinion, if they were my children, they would not take it anymore. I can only recommend for myself, but I would suggest to you that they stop it.
Is there a difference in having Fluor in drinking water or administering little Fluor pills to children?
Well, of course, the little Fluor pills are a much smaller proposition than drinking gallons of water per day or per week, as well as taking a bath in it and washing your automobile in it, and watering your lawns. That's a very massive thing compared to brushing teeth with fluoridated toothpaste. But our work is immediately concerned with drinking water. What happens to toothpaste, I'm quite willing to let the future studies go into that in more detail.
So anyway, there's poison in the tap water.
So you can get that and listen to it again on WRCCT, wearechange.org. And you can go to that. And there's another video, Mercury and Fluoride, the Dumbing Down of America. That's an important one, too. And then you can also sign the petition. And remember to call the Public Health Committee.
Yes.
And
if you, I would go to, you can go to their site.
And get all that information.
wearechange.org. But what I would recommend is you go to YouTube and look up fluoride, F-L-U-O-R-I-D-E, okay? Just put in fluoride on YouTube for a search and see all the incredible information that comes up on that, and you'll understand why it's a great feat for us to be able to at least get this into the Senate, you know, into the state Senate.
He's done a great job.
And I commend him highly.
I do, too. I think it's awesome
tenacity,
what he's done. And that's why, because he's persevered.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that anybody else has the perseverance of Jim Russell. He didn't let anything stand in his way, and I admire that.
Yeah.
And so we'll say goodnight, and please go to wearechangeconnecticut.org, see the work they're doing, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yep.
Have a great night, folks.
Good night, everybody.